Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey man, I gotta tell you something.
What?
I was really actually moved by your little post for your son, Colton, for his birthday, right? Wasn't his birthday last week?
Yeah, it was Saturday.
I watched the whole video, but I gotta tell you, my favorite picture is the picture of Buster, your dog.
Video, it's the basis for one of my jokes and my act.
The best thing is, like,
my mother-in-law, that's her least favorite part of the video.
But you're watching this really sentimental, video with this music, and then all of a sudden you see that picture. I was like, Eddie, you're good, man. You're good.
That's Colton.
So what did he do for his birthday?
His birthday party is next Saturday. Well, he's doing his big class party Saturday.
So is that like he invites everybody in the class?
Yeah.
Do you give him like formal invitations?
Yeah,
like,
we made up some invitations.
Did you do anything like? Are you doing anything fun? Like, any
it's like a place around here called Pump It Up. It's like a big bounce house room.
Oh, that'd be fun. So it sounds like mayhem.
It's crazy.
Does everybody have to sign a waiver before?
Yeah, you do have to sign a waiver. It's actually safer than those trampoline places. The trampoline places are like deadly.
I can imagine. Oh. I've seen those.
Not for little kids, like adults. Adults go in there and just blow knees and break ankles.
Do you get up all up in it?
No. Not anymore.
So you're like,
because I don't want to get all sweaty.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get like instantly sweaty as soon as you step in a bounce house.
But you know what? That's like, you probably are going to have like 15 kids at least.
I hope that many kids come.
Is it parents too, or is it just you and Tracy and 15
kids? No, the
kids?
Parents usually show up. That's the thing about like birthday parties here for some reason. Like when I was growing up as a kid, parents came and just dropped you off.
Yeah.
And I picked you up 3 hours later.
Well, you know what? That's the generation, because that's how my
But here, now, I guess now, parents just stay.
And it's a big party.
Yeah.
Is it because like.
You actually have to put in the invite drop off party.
Huh. That's crazy.
Yeah, because otherwise parents will just come and stay.
I remember a big highlight was my mom and dad threw a big party for my brother. And I got to hang out and do the contests and stuff with them. We had like a... We used to have a little pond in the back. So we do like a little... Like a try and catch some goldfish in a cup contest. And there was like a...
You didn't bob for goldfish?
We didn't bob for goldfish, but we did like a candy apple eating contest. And, you know, do some crazy, filthy, you know...
Nice.
Just dirty mischief.
Nice.
Just kid stuff.
Nice. Are you going to U2 on Saturday or Sunday?
I'm going actually on Sunday. I actually had to move my tickets. Are you going?
No, I wish.
Aw, Eddie.
I can't afford that.
Dude, it's a crazy concert.
It's ridiculous.
You know what?
I would love to take Tracy, but I just can't.
You know what? Let me see what I can do.
What's like $200 a ticket?
Let me see what I can do for you, Eddie. Why don't you? I have some connections. But you know what? It's like I did a crazy thing. I actually was supposed to go on Saturday, and then I got booked to do a gig, an acoustic gig, for an event for a school. And I was like, yeah, I can do it. No problem. And I'm actually doing this event on Saturday, May 20th. So I actually moved my tickets to Sunday, which I didn't even know you could do.
I didn't know you could do that.
Me neither.
For
I
free?
Guess, apparently, it's $5 a ticket, which is totally worth it. So if it's the same venue and the same artist, they can change the tickets for for equal or more value. Isn't that crazy?
What about your seats? Are you getting more seats?
This is the craziest thing. I got 20 rows closer than when I bought them a minute after.
And you have to pay the difference in the ticket?
Nope, no difference.
Just $5.
$5.
That's
$5 a ticket. And then they refunded me, you know, like the delivery.
Yeah.
They refunded me $2.50.
Crazy. It's at the Rose Bowl, right?
Yeah. That's have you ever seen them live?
Yeah. It was 2005, I think I saw him live.
The bummer is it's my brother's favorite band. It's my brother's favorite band.
Yeah.
And he actually is out of town with my folks.
Oh.
And so he's missing that show. I was like, dude, you're going to miss the U2 concert. And he was like, Oh, man.
Yeah, I saw him at Staples Center in like 2004 or 2005.
Elevation Tour.
Yeah.
Great tour. This is my favorite record they're doing.
But we were like up higher than the banners.
Yeah, but you know what? I've sat way up there for a U2 show.
Yeah.
They're one of those bands. They're awesome. Yeah. No matter where you sit.
They're big enough where you can...
I saw their last tour, and I was actually not that stoked on the last tour, so I'm really excited for this one because it's my favorite record, Joshua Tree, and they're going to play a bunch of B-sides from that record, from that era.
Yeah.
Tickets aren't sold out. You can actually get tickets for a lot cheaper than $180. The cheapest tickets I saw were $50. So... Sunday, because there's a lot more tickets available for Sunday.
Yeah, maybe.
Because it's the second show.
Saturday I can't because it's Colton's birthday. So
yeah,
I can't
see? So go on Sunday. We can make a big party out of it, Eddie.
You
see that?
Babysitter.
Yeah!
I don't know.
Woo! Party! Come on, make it happen. It only happens once.
We'll see.
I didn't even know you were a U2 fan.
Yeah, how can you not be a U2 fan?
Ah, good man. Eddie, seriously? We're bridging all these gaps now.
Everybody's. How can you not be a U2 fan?
Hey, have you noticed that sunset right now? I mean, that's the most wicked sunset I've ever seen us do. It must be the luck of our guests, who we'll introduce in a minute. But that seriously,
so there was your segue into the guest. Now you're passing
it
up.
It's just like building.
You don't
suspense.
Set up the
building it up.
You don't set up
you're
the
building
handoff.
It up.
No, you're not building it. It was the setup, and then you just bypassed your own setup.
So let me ask you this:
what?
What have you been up to movie-wise over the weekend? Have you seen anything?
I haven't seen anything.
Nothing? Mm-mm. You haven't rented anything?
No.
I got to tell you, I watched Amadeus last night.
Oh, from 1985? 83.
And you know what? Yeah, I got to tell you something. It's crazy it happened. I've seen the movie tons of times. I have not watched that movie as an adult musician ever. And man, it hit me in a very different way.
Mm.
Not only the performances were great, the music hit me in a different way, but also seeing like what he went through, the things that guy went through as a composer, as a performer, how musicians, his like colleagues, like really turned their backs on him, didn't really give him opportunities. He struggled. He was broke. He was drinking. He was commissioned to do some of his best works, and it's crazy the things that guy went through. And you know, now his music and operas are shown and performed all over the world, and nobody even knows where he's buried. It's crazy. Crazy.
Mm.
But what a movie. I mean, I bought it because I was like, man, I miss that movie. I want to watch that movie again. And it won like 8 Oscars.
Yeah, it was huge.
Did he win Best Picture?
I think it did, yeah.
Did the main guy win Best Actor as well? He did.
Yeah. Huh. Who was the main actor?
I forgot his name. Say again?
Thomas Hulsh.
See, there's our guest. Now
see, there, well, let's introduce our guest. Let's get in
just
here.
Bring him in.
Alan Roy Scott. Hello. Say hello. I'm going to have you come in a little closer so everybody can hear your sultry.
I like
your
the
sultry.
Doorbell. That was good.
Yeah.
Nice
see?
Doorbell.
Nice. You like that? Yeah, it's like Mr. Good. Rogers' Neighborhood all over again.
Hello, so, Mr. Who, Rogers.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Amadeus. Who was the main actor again? What was
Thomas Hulsh.
Yes.
And Salieri, who was always my favorite character, was I forget the actors. Abraham.
That's him. That's right.
And the soundtrack, the theme song, Rock Me Amadeus.
That was a great song.
Yeah, the
great song.
The Austrian guy.
Yep.
Falco.
But I mean, what a movie.
Falco. That's right.
And they shot the whole thing. They shot the whole thing in Salzburg
Prague. It was filmed in where he lived, Austria.
Yes.
Real deal.
And it was crazy because it's like the way they kind of thought about kind of depicting the story. And they showed, there's very few biopics where it's like they depict the actual, like real bullshit that somebody goes through, and they really kind of showed the triumphs. They showed like the genius. They showed the heartache that he kind of went through. You know,
it was a great movie.
It was. Right. It was a great movie. So that was the latest movie that I've watched again. I like to go back and watch movies that sometimes put my memory like, oh, this is a great movie, to see if it still stands the test of time, story wise. And dude, that movie was 3 hours long.
Yeah, was it? That I didn't remember.
3 hours. I mean, I got the director's cut, which only adds like 15 minutes, but it was 2 hours and 45 minutes long. For a movie in the 80s, that's like an epic adventure. But anyways, let's talk about you, Alan Roy Scott.
Hello, hello.
You are one of my favorite new people that I've recently met.
Oh, I mean it.
Where'd you guys meet? Where'd the magic happen?
We met at the songwriting school.
We both teach.
And I met you about a month and a half ago, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe a little
Rob
bit more.
Rob introduced me to you quickly another time.
That's right.
Time, and then
And you know what? This guy's, like, experience and story, it's pretty incredible. I mean, we're going to jump right
Forrest
in.
Forrest Gump. I'm like Forrest Gump.
No, no. You have worked with some amazing people. Alan was a songwriter for Motown for years. I want to just, like, you know, we're going to talk more about your background, like, earlier before Motown. But, like, tell us about what that gig was like, because I've got so many questions. I could do 3 hours just on that experience alone.
I'm not on TV, so you can't see that, but I'm a Caucasian individual.
That's right. I know. He is white.
So I'm white. So I work with all the white people.
Yeah, yeah.
I was signed to Jobette, which is the publishing arm of Motown, but in L.A. I actually moved from Detroit. And
wow.
A guy named Lester Sill, who's a legendary publishing guy. He discovered the Monkees, for instance. He
amazing.
Way back. And Lieber and Stoller. So he was always my boss for my whole publishing career, and he had moved over from EMI, and so I signed over. They were basically trying to spread out of just the Motown into broadening their publishing into a full-service publishing company. So even though I was there, I was mostly writing for film and TV things outside Motown is the point. I mean, obviously the old joke with the Gordies. Oh, God.
The Gordies. Man, he called them the Gordies, man.
Because there was so many family members. You have to understand. Rod, you know, I work with Rodney
Gordy. Course, but I mean, I've never heard
Rockwell,
of that casual.
Kennedy Gordy.
Man.
And Carrie Ashby was Carrie Gordy.
Dude.
And they were all Gordies. And so the
Gordies. That's just, I've never heard somebody just like refer to them so
the
casually.
And the joke was always that when
Ka-chills.
You couldn't get rid of the family members because you couldn't fire them, there would always be more. So
That's a smart man.
Yeah, no. So I was signed for 6 years, and I have my Michael Jackson story and my Lionel Richie story. And
oh,
all those,
wait, let's start with your Michael Jackson. What's your Michael Jackson story?
Well, I actually I met the whole family because I'm from Chicago,
right?
And they're from Gary, and I got invited to the house on Havenhurst. You know,
yeah.
And
it's right close to us.
And because my entree point was I was in Japan of all places, and LaToya and Janet were performing at this Yamaha music festival, which I was at, and Catherine was there.
Wow.
So I hung, because I was there for a week, so I was like Chicago homie talk, and I ended up hanging with Catherine and LaToya and Janet, and this was right before Control. So she sang, the funniest thing is
That's crazy.
A song called Baby Sister, and LaToya was the artist, and Janet was singing background as the baby sister.
That's crazy, dude.
Not a great singer, as you know. And it was written, you know how when you've been around the business a long time, everything's connected.
Yeah.
It's like, and the song was written by Gary Getzman, who is Tom Hanks' partner.
Wow.
Now, but he was a songwriter back in the day. And anyway, and so Michael came over, and it was like just hanging with the Jacksons. And so then after meeting them in Japan, at one point I met another woman who was dating Jermaine, and so she invited me over to the Havenhurst house where they used to live. This is before he had Neverland.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Encino.
This is right when they were splitting up into CBS.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing has gone through so many things. So I mean, it was just like I just hung with them for a little while, you know, and that was kind of like my whole Motown experience. I also, it's funny again being white. You know, Berry Gordy had one white wife. People don't know that her name was Nancy Leviska.
Hmm.
She's Finnish. And their current son, I forget his name.
Oh, he's in the band LMFAO, I think.
Yeah, right? Well, you know, their son. It's her son, and his name is, I forget, you know, they're all Gordies. But anyway.
The Gordies are growing.
No, I mean, you know.
Eddie's the Tito in my life.
So I just met Michael casually because he was just popping over to visit. I was really hanging with Janet and LaToya and Catherine in Japan for a week, and they had dancers, and it was just like a family thing.
That is crazy.
You know.
Was he wearing something cool?
He was just dressed. This is 1985.
Okay, all right.
And this is
still post Thriller. Before the nose.
This is before any of that.
Wow.
And he was downplaying it, and he was just hanging and visiting a little bit. And you know, my memories of the little bit I hung with him the couple days he was around. He was just very shy.
Man.
You know, You know, like,
just, hey, Alan.
Just let go. Yeah.
I mean, Bubbles?
I mean Bubbles.
That would have been over the top. I would have just fainted if you'd. And you're like, yeah, I was hanging out with Bubbles.
So my biggest thing I would take away from it was that she was the real matriarch. That was my real experience. Was Catherine was just a regular old mom.
That's crazy.
You know? It's just funny. You know when it is. You know how it is when you work around celebrities, and I'm like a behind the scenes person.
Yeah.
So I've learned a long time ago. You just kind of have to
observe and hang back.
Oh, you just treat people. Hey, you know.
Yeah.
It's like I know who you are.
Yeah.
Okay. So
Eddie never gets starstruck, but like,
well,
there's certain people that I'm like, man. Oh yeah, I have to just say what's up to.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, of course, we all have our idols. I mean, you know, I have my influences, I suppose. If I never met Elton John, was one of my heroes. If I met Elton John, I would be harder to say, hey, man, how you doing? It'd be a little harder
Yeah,
for me,
yeah.
You know.
My brother's favorite band is U2, and I was like, man, what would you say if Bono was sitting having breakfast right behind you? He said, I'd definitely say hello. I'm like, really?
Well, but you know, the key is you just don't like anybody more than you respect them.
Yeah.
You know who they are.
Yeah.
They know who they are. And rather than, like, you know, you just
don't make it weird.
Don't make it weird.
Don't
make
it
weird. No humping the leg.
Can I have a bumper sticker that says don't make it
weird? Don't make it weird.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen.
Have you ever made it weird? You probably made it weird. With somebody.
Celebrities?
Yeah. Somebody? No? Awkwardness? Nothing? Never?
No.
Oh, all
right. I wouldn't go up to one.
So when you see somebody that you're like, I want to just say what's up. No.
Unless something happens where we have to encounter each other in some sort of incident, like they drop something, well, here, you dropped it, something like that, then I wouldn't. But if it's just normal, if like they're just walking around, I'm not going to go up to them.
I usually go up to artists that are like people that I truly, truly admire. That I just wanted to say I'm just a huge fan of your work. But one time, Nicolas Cage and Al Pacino came to one of my gigs,
right.
And they sat in a booth,
right.
And they were eating, and Al Pacino just looked pissed.
Well, sometimes people are dicks, right?
Yeah, right.
Sometimes they're all human. We can be dicks. Sometimes people are assholes, including celebrities or anyone else.
Yep.
And if you get a day where they're feeling like being,
but that was one moment I was like, we'll just kind of step this one out.
Right.
What's your Lionel Richie story?
You know, Lionel used to run a scholarship called the Lionel, when I was at NAS, the National Academy of Songwriters. I was on the board of directors there. And I knew him because I had met him a couple times. We had, like, Motown gatherings where they had all the Gordies and a whole bunch of people, and they introduced all the
Gordies,
and
the Richies,
and here's the
Jacksons.
And here's the Jobet people, and Lester Sill brought all the writers over, Steve Diamond and the rest of us. And
it's
we
amazing.
Just met in that kind of a casual setting. So, I mean, I don't mean to make it sound so...
No, but it's amazing because it is an era of songwriting, producing, writers, recording artists that are all under this crazy umbrella.
Well, because back in the day there were so many people around like that. It wasn't like I have some crazy stories about certain people we can get whatever share or Barbara Streisand. But a lot of times it's not like you have a crazy story.
Yeah.
You just were around them.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
For a day or an afternoon or an hour or hanging in Japan with you know the whole Jackson family where it was just we were all there together for this thing.
See Eddie's he's a diehard Pearl Jam fan. I secretly want to arrange like a hang with Pearl Jam and just see what Eddie's response would be.
I wouldn't bother them.
No. If I surprised you and just put you in a room with just you and Pearl Jam.
Well then you'd have to be like, hey, what's going on? Why are we locked in this room together? This is weird.
But see, I want to see you kind of in those situations.
I would like to say what you would do, the first thing you say is, Hey Eddie man, you got them.
You got some broccoli in your teeth.
That's the first thing you say.
You got some broccoli in your
looking,
teeth.
You're that guy.
You know it's Eddie for the better. You're in the room, and the first thing you say is,
"Yeah,
hey, amen." Man, you got a little thing.
You need
there,
a mint.
You know, so you immediately establish.
But I wouldn't bother them if they're
playing
just
playing field, right?
If they're just out and about. I'd leave them alone.
I guess there's something like you know, what I'm in awe of certain artists, and when if I'm like in the same room with them, there's a bit of that like, holy shit. There is the artist that I've been listening to for 15
if I'm working
years.
With them or there's I'm doing an interview or something, I was like, I'm a huge fan, I'm really you know, admire your work. Yeah, but if they're just like eating, I'm not gonna go, I'm just not gonna bother.
Well, that I won't.
Or
do
if
that.
They're just walk if you see
it
them out, I'm just not gonna bother them.
Like it makes sense.
You know.
So what did you say to Lionel Richie? Were you just hanging?
I was just hanging.
Were you dancing on the ceiling?
No. It was just, we were at the same company meeting. I just said, you know, I mean, it was introduced, we were introduced to all the writers, and I said, hey, Lionel, I said, obviously, you know, I said, we're all here together. I said, you know, and I was just saying, it's really great to be at the company, and I'm really, you know, happy to be one of the writers here now. And he was just saying to me stuff like, you know, you're in a good company, and if you're signed here, you're part of the family.
That's amazing, dude.
You know, and it was just chit chat.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, I don't have
no, but you know what?
Exciting it's, or
like
some,
especially
some
like
because
labels are like disintegrating and they're kind of merging and they're losing kind of like
well,
that family aspect.
There used
aspect.
To be 90 labels, and then yeah. you know, and now they all yeah. merge, as you know. And Motown yep. was a very proud standalone
yeah.
company. And I'm from Chicago, and they're from Detroit, and you know, and then it got merged with Mercury, and then PolyGram, and. Became a non-entity.
Did you right? work and record in the Motown studio?
Whoops.
That's all right. That's all right.
Is it Lionel? Is yes. Lionel calling you?
That's Lionel.
He's like, dude.
Yeah. Well, what it is the Hitsville Studios. They had Hitsville over on Selma.
Yeah, yeah. Now it's a museum.
Right. So, well, you're talking Detroit?
Yeah.
No, I didn't ever work in Detroit.
Okay.
I'm talking
okay.
L.A. They had
okay.
Hitsville here.
That's right. I remember that. That's
LA.
Right. It was
that's
near Watts, wasn't
right.
it? Yeah.
And that's the one we all worked on.
Oh,
also,
that's amazing.
The publishing company had their own studio in the offices. Joe Bett Music, we had our own studio.
That's incredible.
So, you know, back in the day when I was with EMI, and I was with EMI for 7 years, every publishing company then had their own studios. All were in-house.
I miss those
so
days.
So you used to just, like write songs, book the studio, and the in-house studios had an in-house engineer.
Yeah.
And everyone would go, and, like, if I was writing with someone from MCA or Warner Chappell, we'd say, well, let's do the demo over at Jobette on this one, or let's do the studio, whatever.
And you're doing everything to tape, because that was not the digital time, right?
No, this is two-inch tape.
Oh, man.
Two-inch tape land, or you know,
and
one-inch
like horn
tape,
sections
Fostex.
And strings.
Well, when I first
right?
came up, it was live musicians.
Oh,
when I first
goodness.
Came up in the late 70s, I came up in the disco era, so
right.
that's why, you know, Body Language was my first hit. That's 1979. So when you were doing demos there, you were doing all live studio musicians, and what it usually was is the demo sessions were record players who would do a favor in Moonlight and do some demos when they weren't doing record dates.
Wow.
So when you would get a room full of record
A-squad, yeah.
And you, what the deal was, you had like 30 seconds to come, and I talk about this because I can do charts.
Yeah.
Because as a songwriter,
yep.
well, no. You know, now you have to do everything too. You have
yep.
to know how to program. You have to
yep.
know social media. You have to buy.
Yes.
A,
oh my God.
No, it's, you still
it's
have
everything.
To do everything,
yep.
but it's a different everything.
Yep. Yep.
Back then, it was a more isolated kind of everything. And the point was, you had 45 seconds to show those cats that you knew what you were doing.
Right.
That the song was laid out for them, where
right.
they were going to do a record date on the side. They wanted to play through it once, have it be ready. They didn't want to have to figure anything out.
Wow.
You know? So you had... And if
it's a
you
lot of pressure.
And if you didn't get it together, you would lose them.
That's crazy.
And if you lost them, you lost them. And
yeah.
if you came in there prepared, you know, I had, like, incredible record cats in all my demos in those days.
Well, let's play this song since we're getting the perfect segue, as Eddie says.
This is 1979. This is Disco Baby.
I love it.
Body Language.
Oh, right. Body Language by the Spinners, right?
Yeah, and it was the first thing. It was before Working My Way Back to You. Remember Working My Way Back to You? That was on the same album.
Yeah.
That was the biggest hit off the album. Mine was the first single. I went, like, top 15.
That's amazing. Body Language.
Body Language.
Here it comes.
Can you move it
over the floor?
Ooh, wee, baby, you're really rocking your hips now. The way you're parting your lips now.
Child.
You're
just too much.
You know what? We were listening. We were grooving. We were also talking. Let's talk a little bit about. You were just telling me the most amazing story that you kind of grew up in Chess Records.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that.
I'm from the South Side of Chicago. Yeah, because I mean, each story.
I'm gonna have you come in a little closer, just so you can.
Come in
so
a little closer.
There
ready?
You go. Yeah, get
I'll
your radio voice on.
And you lead me along, and if I'm getting long in the sales,
oh, you're good. You're good.
Anyway, so no, I grew up in the South Side of Chicago. In the 60s, obviously, I was born in the late 50s, but my father is kind of an unsung hero because he was a car dealer, but he was very involved in the whole civil rights movement. So that time in music, he had a gospel radio show from the showroom of his Pontiac dealership called Jubilee Showcase. That was the neighborhood show. And so he was best friends with people from the time, the Chess family.
And Eddie, do you know anything about Chess Records?
Mm-mm.
Leonard Chess, he signed Muddy Waters.
Muddy Waters, Eddie James.
James.
Chuck Berry did early
That's
records.
Right. That's right.
For them.
So all the old blues guys would go.
And then he worked with Sun Records. He worked with Sam Phillips at Sun Records. And so these were family friends for my father. And so I got to go to some sessions. I was just a little kid.
But being around it, it's just like a lively energy.
Gospel
you know?
Choirs and Reverend Al Green and Chaka Khan was from a group called the Heavenly Sunbeams, who grew up to be the Emotions. Ever heard the Emotions?
Of course.
Wanda Vaughn, they were from the neighborhood. So I thought I was the wrong color, you know, because I was this little, I looked like Opie from the Andy Griffith Show. I was only around, you know, gospel and R&B and that.
And you kind of like were playing at that time, like you were learning?
No, I was a child.
You were just listening.
I was just absorbing. I just grew up around it because the funniest thing is then I went on to get away from that. We moved to the suburbs of Chicago where I grew up and I got into musical theater and I trained to be an actor. That's what I trained to be. So later on,
he does comedy and acting and all the whole bit.
I did summer stock. I went to musical theater school, neighborhood playhouse in New York, Amda Boss Conservatory. I led the life of a musical theater, but I'd always done songwriting as a second hobby from my childhood.
Right.
And so later on, when I switched and I got set up in these situations, suddenly the music just came pouring out of me naturally, the R&B, because it was always there.
Right.
It was
and
like,
you were around
what
it.
The hell is this?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't even know I could.
Real quick, you just said that you met Martin Luther King Jr. when you were 5 years
because
old.
Because my father was involved in 68, the Chicago riots.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know your
history. I know my history, yes.
The Blackstone Rangers. We grew up in Hyde Park, 47 in Kenwood in Chicago. Jesse Jackson was involved with Operation Push. So my father was, as a white guy, that's why I'm very proud of my father.
Yeah.
I keep talking about
especially
my father.
At the time,
he was a white guy was the head of the local NAACP as a white guy.
Wow, dude.
And the Chicago Urban League, which was another thing of the times. So because of that, he was a go-between between the Daily Machine, Mayor Daily, all that. And so therefore, he was involved in all those kinds of things with Jesse Jackson. And when Martin Luther King came to town for the janitor strike, my father was invited to meet him, and he came to the, you know, to the dealership because they were having meetings. I'm sorry, you know, there's so much history.
That's amazing.
Through this,
yeah.
And because they held
you're a 5 year old kid.
Showroom.
Did you know that Martin Luther King Jr. was a special person?
I knew he was somebody important. I was five.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
wild. But I obviously now as an adult, I know I met him, and I know that he was hanging with my father, and I know that I was watching him and my father and Jesse Jackson sitting around talking.
That's crazy.
And as an adult, I can just have a memory of my father sitting around talking with these people. That's why I don't mean to be casual when I say, "Oh, and I met," because I've always been.
Yeah.
I've just been around that.
You're like a regular Forrest Gump.
You are like a Forrest Gump. Yeah, that's right.
I feel like Forrest Gump that way, which has done me well later on when I've had the great fortune to work with a lot of different celebrities along the way because I'm used to just learning how to.
Well, let's go way back. So, how did you get into music? Like, what was the thing that kind of like what was your Zen moment?
Because I was always around music when I was five. I was watching Jubilee Showcase every Sunday morning, and here's Chaka Khan, or the Norfleet Brothers, or early Motown acts, and it was just from a child.
I know the Temptations were on that,
the early Motown stuff.
Yep.
So I was just this young child just being completely around it, and it was part of my life, my family. You know, it wasn't anything special, it was just the life.
So how did you start with piano? Did you start with
guitar? I'm self-taught. So,
wow.
So the answer is I'm self-taught. I took piano lessons as a little child. I had an old bitty piano teacher I hated. You know, I never liked learning piano by practicing a technique. I took lessons. I quit. Then when I was 13, I kind of returned to music, as a lot of teenagers do. The piano was in the basement, and I just started tinkering with it, and I self-taught myself by playing along to some of my influences at the time. Earth, Wind, and Fire,
great.
Elton John, piano guys, Billy Joel, you know, Steve, all the Motown stuff because I remember meeting them from my childhood. So I learned how to play every note of the Blood, Sweat, and Tears albums, the one that had Spinning Wheel on it.
Yep, I know
and
that.
And the first Elton John album. I learned how to play every song on the album by rote.
And those guys were always influenced by Motown.
Well, it's all connected.
Black
so
artists,
that was there. So
R&B.
What was happening in high school, I was going from being in Fiddler on the Roof in Brigadoon, and I was in the high school choir, and we were doing all that, and then I would be in a band, because, you know, we all in high school, we all want to get the chicks.
Yep. That's what you do, Eddie.
That's what you do.
That's what you do.
So
rock and roll gets the girls.
So I was doing a band and the musical theater thing, but so I was always around music, and then I went to a place called Interlaken.
Yep.
In
Switzerland, right?
No, actually, there's an Interlaken place, but it's a high-level arts camp in northern Michigan.
Okay, I've heard
and
of that, yes.
Interlaken, and lots of all the prodigies go there.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there for
it's usually a summer program.
It
right?
is, and so I did Gilbert and Sullivan. You know,
wow.
You talk about eclectic.
Yep.
I studied, I know every Gilbert and Sullivan opera.
I did Gondoliers, man.
There you go. I was
great
in
show.
Patience in the
great
Mikado
show.
And HMS Pinafore, and so every summer I wanted to be the star of the Gilbert and Sullivan opera.
Mm.
So I had a very eclectic musical background, which a lot of people do, which sometimes you'd be to cry that people today don't have the breadth of music
true.
I did because I grew up at
they
the
don't know the history.
Five, and I'm watching Etta James in a studio. Then I get older, I'm in a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta. I'm playing a part in Fiddler on the Roof, and my father was a huge jazz fan and playing me Dinah Shore records and all the records he was into.
So you're being pulled in all kinds of directions.
All kinds of directions. So when I got to songwriting, I already had this rich canvas of experiences to draw from.
Amazing.
You know?
So what was the moment for you that you were like, I want to be a songwriter?
I reached a day, I took the acting thing as far as I could go. I made that my life for 10 years. I went to college. I said, he's talking about being an actor. I went to, you know, summer stock. I was on Broadway for a moment in an early revival of Hair. That was the peak of my acting career.
That's awesome.
When I had hair.
In the 70s, Oh, man.
And so what happened, but I really wasn't, I'm a behind the scenes kind of a guy. Now I could be an actor again. And I've done a couple things now because I'm comfortable being myself.
Right.
I'm just, you know, you get older, you like, I am who I am.
Yeah,
I'm stupid, I'm ugly, I'm short, I'm fat, whatever I am who I am. And now I can just be me.
Right.
But when I was 18 and 20, I wasn't comfortable.
Right.
And I would go out for all these auditions, and I would be in all these shows, and I never felt that was really a fit for me. And I reached a day where I just said, I'm done being an actor. I'm going to concentrate on songwriting. And I went from that day of epiphany to 10 months later, I had Body Language.
That's crazy.
Which is, you know, today that can happen easily because people go from being on Star Search and 8 weeks later they win.
No, but I mean, that's a different time. I mean,
American Idol or whatever, you know.
Eddie, you never did any musical theater, right?
No, I have no musical talent.
Did you do any theater in school?
I did some theater, but I never did anything with music.
So you never did Gilbert and Sullivan?
Like plays,
yeah. Yeah, like the high school.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's a big jump to go from, you know, acting to music. Just... It's a different, like you're in a whole other vehicle, world.
And the funniest thing about it is I just came back 3 days ago from, it's a fun, talk about full circle. I came back from an ocean cruise. My friend Alan Rich and Artie Butler, who did, Artie Butler, I didn't even know, that arranged What a Wonderful World for Louis Armstrong.
Oh, wow.
So
dude.
So he's showing a picture of Louis, telling Louis Armstrong stories. And Alan Rich wrote one to you, Run to You for Whitney Houston, and I Don't Have the Heart for James Dean. So there was the three of us doing a Songwriters in the Round on a cruise, a 9-day cruise from L.A. to Panama.
That's amazing.
Anyway, but they don't usually have those kinds of things on the cruise. This was a film and TV theater cruise. So they had Lainey Kazan, who was Barbra Streisand's understudy, and all these Broadway people, and the three of us on the same cruise doing this. And we did the songs.
You all should have done a musical together.
So that was like bringing all parts of my life full circle last week.
That's crazy.
But, you know, look, I've been very lucky, Nikhil. You know, I've had years where I've made some good money, maybe, you know, along the way. I've had my good years, my bad years. But the bottom line is I have done nothing but music since 1978.
That's, and you know what? That's an
and
unbelievable.
And I may not
that's,
be.
Our studio audience loves that. We love music people.
You know, and I've raised my family and had houses, lost houses, gained houses, have kids.
Yeah.
But the point is that, like any of us, through the suffering and the times where you wonder what the hell am I doing and it's not working out, but I never stopped doing music. I didn't ever give up.
Well, that's what was interesting about the Amadeus movie, that would struck a thing for me as an adult musician. I was watching Mozart kind of go through these crazy trials and womanizing and all this stuff, but what never, like, he never faltered on the music. You know, like, and that's kind of like what the constant would, as artists, Eddie, you can relate to this completely. You know, it's like you never stray from the art. It's sometimes you want to because it's just like life takes you on these curves. Yes.
You feel like giving up. But
yes.
Those are the moments you have to
fight through.
Meaning, we've all heard this a million times in every story of anybody that ever does anything in our industry. You know, it's all the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's those moments when you want to give up and you don't that test what you're about.
Well, let's play. I want to play something else that you have.
Yeah,
I
bought a couple other.
What song? What do you want to play next for us?
Well, I have so much to say, but anyway.
I love this.
I'll save that for
you. Know, I got to tell you. I got to tell you, Alan. We've had so many guests. You've got some amazing stories.
I've had
and
a powerful ride.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to keep bringing you back to be a guest, so don't worry. But
I was going
to
say,
your story is just remarkable.
Because the international thing's a big part of my life. I've been to 112 countries, kings, queens, and dictators. I'll jump into that portion.
Yeah.
It's called Music Bridges. I started doing these projects where I bring celebrities to politically sensitive situations. Like, I started in the Soviet Union in 1980s. Talk
wow.
about full circle.
Cold
That's
War.
Why I'm playing this song.
Right.
What happened was in 1988, right before the...
That's the coup, right? Right around the coup?
Well, Gorbachev,
before the wall came down.
Right before the wall came down in 1988, I brought a whole bunch of people to Moscow. Cyndi Lauper, Michael Bolton, Diane Warren, and a whole cream of the crop of old world songwriters. Mike Stoller, Lieber and Stoller,
yep.
Barry Mann.
Wow.
While I had all these people together, Holly Knight.
All in Russia?
All
in
one project. And we went to the Soviet Union and we wrote songs with Soviet songwriters and
That's
artists.
Incredible.
In 1988. And I have, there's a whole video, I made an album for Epic of it. It's called Music Speaks Louder Than Words. Anyway, Don Grierson came along to make a long story, and I wrote a song on Stalin's riverboat.
Wow.
With a picture of Joseph Stalin, Cindy Lauper, the song I'm going to play, Cindy Lauper, me, a Russian star named Igor Nikolaev, and Frankie Previtt, who wrote I've Had the Time of My Life, song. The four of
Dirty
us.
Dancing.
Right. The four of us wrote the song you're going to hear on Stalin's riverboat, because this project was bringing, and I've done more
That's
of those
amazing.
Projects. I brought 120 artists to Cuba in 1999, back then, and we ended up having a private reception with Fidel Castro. I mean, kings, queens, and dictators.
Dude!
Because the point is, I'm just a guy,
right.
Nikhil.
I'm not...
We were there the same weekend as the Baltimore Orioles. That was a time where they played exhibition games in Cuba in 1999.
Right. And that's when they started really bringing a lot of Cuban
players.
The same
weekend, I was there with all these artists doing this project called Music Bridges in Havana, and we did a big concert in the Comerc. I had Bonnie Raitt, Jimmy Buffett, Gladys Knight with me, Peter Buck from R.E.M.
Yeah.
All with Michelle Andiacello, Brenda
Dude,
Russ.
Dude, she's one of my favorite musicians.
You can go to my website, Music Bridges, and see all these photos and videos from these projects.
Let's play it. I want to get to it.
This song...
What's the name of the song?
I'll tell you. It's a real quick story. The funniest thing about it was... And one other part about it, and I'll play it. It's called Cold Sky. I organized this project. So, of course, as any time in life, when you organize things, and I'm dealing with all these celebrities, the way I used to do the collaborations... I would put people's names in a hat and draw them randomly.
That's the way to do it.
Because my theory was, you know, as Quincy Jones used to say, you know, leave your ego at the door.
Yep.
And it's like, well, my publisher wants me to write with that person.
Right.
I said,
Nope.
Here, you're in the spirit of writing with these people, these Russians. Let's just put our names in a hat. And you write with who you get. And if you want to do other stuff at night or write your own, whatever. But during the day, you're on my project to write with. So we put the names in a hat and... I had my publisher with me, and she's always going, you know, you organize it, but get in there, you're a songwriter, come on, you know? So she made me put my name in the hat, because I'm thinking, no, people will think I'm like trying to get in there with celebrities.
Right.
You know, anyway, I get Cindy Lauper, Igor Nikolaev, and Frankie, and she goes, I'll never forget this as long as I live, Cindy Lauper goes, you mean I gotta write with the organizer? Oh my
That's
God.
That's awesome.
Oh, even telling you that now,
you're like, that's amazing.
I'm feeling like
And she's all, you know, she's all glammed up with her orange hair.
But actually, she ended up becoming a very good friend of mine. She's one of my favorite artists. She really is that way.
She's the real deal.
She's authentic.
Yeah.
She's the real deal.
Yeah.
When we did get together writing it, I came up with, you know, the chorus. When we made the record, she flew us to New York. We had a budget from, you know, we went to Hit Factory, and she was it was a great experience. So this song is that four-way collaboration. You're going to hear a Russian rap, because the guy, artist, Igor Nikolaev, is doing like a Russian rap in this.
Well, luckily for Eddie loves Russian
rap.
This is not like rap as we know. It's more talking than rapping, but you'll hear it.
That's cool.
Here we go.
This is called Cold Sky.
Не уходи, побудь еще немножко. Я тебя прошу. Я тебя очень прошу. Такое холодное небо сегодня. Холодные звезды.
Down the street, memories surround me. I'm lost in a town without pity. Brings me to my knees, thoughts of me in your arms. Sends a shiver through me. My weary heart knows better.
что я теряю тебя. Но мы что же можем сделать, ты или я, если много между нами холодного неба, такого холодного неба. Скоро ты узнаешь, ты узнаешь, что было на самом деле. Мой самолет никогда больше не приблизится к тому дому, к той стране, к тем глазам, которые я так люблю. Я никогда тебя не забуду.
It was hot. Cyndi Lauper. Man, Cyndi Lauper. With some rap. I didn't think I'd hear that today when I woke up this morning.
Cyndi Lauper with Russian rap.
That's right. Did you think you'd get some Cyndi Lauper with some Russian rap? Right?
I didn't think I'd hear anything from Cyndi Lauper today.
See, I'm bringing in worlds.
Yeah.
Worlds are colliding right in front of you. I want you to appreciate that.
They're appreciated.
So you were saying that you recorded this at the Hit Factory.
Yeah.
What was that like?
She brought in Jeff Bova, who's a big keyboard guy, and she produced herself with Jeff Bova and me.
She's like a true artist. Like
she's a true artist.
I've seen her like her process, never in person.
I've worked with a lot of I can tell you Cher and our Patti LaBelle, who cooked us dinner after the session. Luther Vandross, Aretha Franklin. I mean, a bevy of artists I've worked with, but she's way at the top of my list because she was just such a. She was no faking.
Right, right.
Ever you think that cardboard cutout person, that was really her.
Let me ask you this. Like, what was one of your biggest, oh my goodness, moments? I can't believe I'm here doing this.
It's Barbara Streisand, Quincy Jones relationship. So, recently. Barbara Streisand has a son named Jason Gould, and he's great. And we've been developing him for some years, and it's a long story. He's finally coming out with an album. I've written some songs with him and a bunch of my friends, and it's Quincy Jones has produced the album finally. And so recently, about 2 years ago, when she was doing her big tour of the Hollywood Bowl, he invited all the writers who had been working with him to the Hollywood Bowl for her final show with him, and we all got to go backstage, and she basically said to all of you, all of the writers, the four of you, she just said, thank you all for taking care of my son.
That's crazy.
And my big memory of Barbara Streisand is she's very, very short.
Really?
She came up to here.
Wow.
But I was just amazed that we're sitting here backstage at the Hollywood Bowl and all the celebrities are buzzing around, James Brolin and Elliot Gould, the whole thing. And she took the time to say to the four of us, my son is so happy. He's doing great, and I really want to thank you guys for taking him and developing him.
Isn't it nice and refreshing when you see somebody that has had a little bit of global dominance, and they also make the time to be sweet?
Because she's a parent.
Yeah,
that's what I was saying to you about earlier on.
Yeah,
Michael Jackson. Oh, the bottom line is she's a mother too.
Yeah,
and you work with her son, and she was appreciative. Whatever else, she's a goddess. People say she's a bit, whatever she is.
Right, right.
She's also a mother, and at that moment, she was just a mother thanking us like you would about your kids or anyone else's. And then at the same thing, and then with the album, Quincy Jones, I was kind of like you talk about meeting someone. I've met him a few times, but in this recent time, we were at a screening together, and I walked up to him with Alan, and I said, with Q, I said, I wrote a little song called Dangerous Man, and the new project was kind of doing my little humble, and he says, oh man, that's the title track. So that's a great thing.
That's awesome.
Quincy Jones say, oh, do I know it? Oh, yeah, man, that's the title. That's the title track.
You're like,
and yes. And I go, we did a great job. You're going to love it. It came out. And I'm thinking to myself, this is Quincy Jones making small talk with me to tell me, hey, man, I love your song. It's the title track. Those are the kind of moments you talk about.
That's
not
shit.
A celebrity moment. That's right. Not Quincy Jones is a legend moment. That's a I'm just a songwriter guy.
And but that's your moment where you're just off, like, wow.
And it reminded me that I'm okay. I'm good at what I do. I've worked really, really hard.
Yeah.
And here's someone like that who's going out of his way to thank me and tell me I love what you've done. And that made me, that's the kind of moment you live for as a songwriter, you know?
That's crazy. Right. Where can people find you real quick before we play your last song?
You know what? I'm embarrassed to tell you I don't really have a dedicated
old schooler. I like it.
I know.
I like it.
I'm just building a website.
Well, do you have an email? Would it be all right?
Yeah.
Would it be all right to announce your email if anybody wants to get?
That's right. Yes.
So spell out your email for everybody, just in case somebody wants to get a hold of you.
Musicbridges, one word: MUSICBRIDGES. Musicbridges@sbcglobal.net.
Awesome. Alan Roy Scott, we're going to play one more song real quick.
This is my Celine Dion song. I'll tell you a little story.
Yeah, please.
Because the thing about that was. Most people think of Celine Dion only for her ballads, right?
Yeah.
So I have an up-tempo song, which is rare because the reason I got the cut on the album was, well, you know the it's always who you know.
Right.
That never changes. So my co-writer in the song, who unfortunately has passed away, was her music director, French-Canadian, because she's French-Canadian.
Right, I know that.
His name's Claude Gaudet, and he was David Foster's keyboard player, but also her musical director. So he and I had a lot of success together. Celine Dion, Roberta Flack, a bunch of good stuff. But anyway, on this particular case, Umberto Gatica said to Claude, his name was Claude, that we need an up-tempo song because they have all the ballads. So we quickly cranked out an up-tempo song, and the point is that we made it, and it was on the album with Beauty and the Beast.
Wow.
And so it's an up-tempo song on that album.
Let's hear it. I'm ready. What's it called?
It's called A Little Bit of Love.
Little Bit of Love.
There we go. Let's sign out.
On behalf of Eddie Pence, I'm Nicky Carulla.
Good night, everybody.
Yeah.